Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're here on our second case on our two-case oral calendar this morning. And this case is A24-1279, Bridget Jeanette Bergman, and on behalf of minor children respondent versus Benjamin Bergman appellant. There is just one party that will be arguing today, but via counsel. And that is the appellant. For that reason, there will be no rebuttal, no need for it. So you will have 15 minutes, counsel for appellant, for your principal argument. This argument is being presented via Zoom, but we are just maintaining for our court records and for public and posting on a public website and audio vision. Or version rather of this argument. So counsel, when you begin your argument, if you could please state your name and the party you represent for the record, keep an eye on the clock. And when you are ready, we are ready for you.
Very good, Your Honor. Good morning and may it please the court. My name is Matthew Francis. I represent the appellant in this matter, Benjamin Bergman. And the basis for this appeal, Your Honor, is that we believe that the district court abused its discretion by granting harassment restraining orders in favor of the respondent, Ms. Bergman, and the two minor children. We believe that there was insufficient facts that were adduced during the trial and insufficient facts in the court's findings of fact that could support the findings based upon the statutes and based upon a case law. First, I want to address the minor children. That's the most important to my client. The district court found that there were basically three reasons to grant a restraining order in favor of the minor children. The first was based upon—
Counsel, just before you explain that part of your argument, if you wouldn't mind, I'd appreciate understanding better. In your brief, when you identify this issue as to your challenge to the HRO as to the minor children, you indicate that appellants are raising this issue for the first time on appeal. So could you explain what you mean by that? How did this issue get preserved below?
With respect to, I said in my brief that this is the first time on appeal? Or is Your Honor saying
yes,
that?
I see it on page one of your brief on the statement of the issues. Second issue relates to your challenge. HRO is to the minor children. And it says, how raised? Appellants raised this issue for the first time on appeal. And I didn't notice briefing, so I just want to understand what you
mean.
Yeah,
no, that was an error on my part, Your Honor. Both my client argued strenuously against the restraining order for both children during the oral, during the district court's action. So that is a typo on my part. My apologies.
Okay. So you're not asking us to take this issue for the first time on appeal, because that would have been my next question.
Correct.
What grounds we would do that. Okay.
Nope, absolutely, Your Honor. Nope, that was simply a typo.
So when you say that you defended it vigorously, I mean, I wouldn't appreciate hearing your view of the transcript. I've read it. And of course, there was that initial exchange between yourself, the district court, and Ms. Bergman, in which the discussion related to whether this could be resolved without an evidentiary hearing. And I would set that aside, obviously,
right,
because there was an evidentiary hearing and findings made. But then there's the closing argument that I think perhaps you made, but certainly it's made on behalf of the appellant in this case. And in that closing argument, there seems to be, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'd like to hear, what was your position as to what the district court should do on behalf of the minor children? What was your client's position in closing argument?
Sure, Your Honor. Your Honor, I did not argue this case. This was another attorney who
okay,
argued
and
it.
I apologize for not noticing that. Yeah,
that's correct. Nope, that's quite all right. I made an error already myself. So, the issue here, Your Honor, was that we do not believe that the restraining order should be granted. We do not believe that there was sufficient evidence here. We believe that with respect to the minor children, I know that there was my counsel noted that there was is a criminal case involving my client that did not allow him to have contact with unsupervised with minor children already. And so there was no basis for this. And so, and it was just overall, I'm summarizing it, Your Honor, because did not review the transcript before today's hearing. But we certainly argue that there was just not a basis for a restraining order against either party based upon the evidence that was submitted.
All right. Because I won't ask you to look at it further at this point.
Sure.
Why don't you just go ahead?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it speaks for itself, right? I mean, it's there, it's part of the record. I mean, I'm looking at it right now, and I know that I see on page 13 of the transcript that Mr. Marshall argues, I don't believe there's any evidence here of harassment. They certainly have disagreements. That's why they got divorced. And this isn't a petition for an OFP, and there's no evidence that any kind of harassment has taken place. We think the petition fails. And then, but you know, having said that, we can assure everyone that any contact with the children will be, you know, supervised appropriately, and that Mr. Bergen has no interest in frightening his children or having contact with them in any way, in a way that would not be in their best interest. So I think, again, it's been dealt with in criminal court, and it seems that the real basis of the petition, we feel that the petition fails for those reasons, Your Honor. So that covers both the
Right. And
petitioner.
I just wanted to get your perspective on it. Certainly the first
Sure.
paragraph that you read, with references to the divorce and the disagreements between the Bergmans, that is specific to Ms. Bergman's request for an HRO, I think. I think that's a fair reading
Yes.
of that. And then there is a discussion certainly about an HROs to the children, but it seems to almost implicitly accept that the criminal charges have bearing on whether an HRO should be issued. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on what that argument meant below and whether you're continuing to assert
Right.
here.
I think, well, the overall thing, Your Honor, and I think this is part of the kind of the basis. I did make a comment about this at the end of my brief, that this is a case that really should have been brought in family court. This is not a harassment restraining order case, I think clearly. There is not sufficient evidence here. There's acts of harassment, especially with the minor children. And I think what Mr. Marshall was trying to do was assure the court that, look, there's no basis for a harassment restraining order, but if Your Honor is concerned about there being contact with the minor children, that's addressed in the criminal court file. And obviously my client, Mr. Bergman, is not interested or not wanting in any way, shape, or form to harass his children. He loves them, he wants to have contact with them, and is not
But
trying
of
to.
course, as you know, this isn't necessarily about Mr. Bergman's intent to frighten. It could be. I mean, that is can be a relevant piece of evidence in a granting a harassment restraining order. That's not the type of evidence that the district court cites as a reason for it issuing the HRO on behalf of the children. He cites it's the children's fear of Mr. Bergman based on the criminal charges. And I just want to,
Right.
if you don't mind, just respond to your argument that that's insufficient to support the
Yeah, well,
HRO.
addressing that direct question, Your Honor, in Dunham versus Rohrer, which is cited 708 Northwest 2nd 552, the court of your this court said that that in order to get a restraining order, it has to be a demonstrate a both an objectionably unreasonable conduct or intent on the part of the appellant, or the objectionably reasonable belief on the part of the person subject to the harassing conduct. So in other words, you have to have some sort of conduct that is deemed harassing, right? So with the minor children, there was only three things that were mentioned. The first was that the one minor child went onto the petition, my client's phone, and found text messages she didn't like. Okay, well, my client didn't show her the phone. My client had nothing, it did not say, go ahead, you can look at whatever you want to on the phone. So he should
Well,
not be that.
if you don't mind, counsel, I believe that Ms. Bergman did testify that it was her understanding that at least one of the daughters had read text messages on Mr. Bergman's phone.
No, I
And
understand that she did, Your Honor,
so I'm
but the point is
yeah.
my client didn't show it to her, right? So in other words, if I go into my parents', you know, closet and I look and I find dirty magazines, you know, can I say my father did something wrong? No, I was the one who went in there without permission
What
and
if
searched for something.
the child had seen texts on a phone that were threatening to the child? Person didn't
If you're
intend them, they still engage in the conduct that the child that later would reasonably and objectively cause, let's posit, the child to fear.
Right. I would say that that would also fail because I believe that there has to be an objective intent on the behalf of the person who's conveying the information. Let's think of threats of violence, for example. I prosecute cases in my other life. So one of the things when I look at a threats of violence is, did the person intend to convey that threat of violence to the other person? So in other words, if you have two people who are talking to each other, one person says, I really don't like person B, I want to go and beat the heck out of him, or I'm going to go kill him if he does XYZ again. He doesn't say that with the intent that that is conveyed to his friend or whoever he's conveying that to. And if that person then goes and conveys it, I don't look at that as being a threat of violence because it's a private conversation, ostensibly, between two people that's not meant to go out to another person. Now, if he says, you go tell so-and-so that next time you see him, he's a dead man, well, then that would be a threat of violence because there's an intent to convey that threat. Here, there's no intent. Go ahead, Your Honor.
Oh, thanks. What about the you're going to reference the other bases for the children. One was that your client got very drunk in front of them and frightened them. It was the
yes.
testimony. And I think on cross-examination, that there were multiple of the petitioner, I think, is like, oh, there wasn't just one incident of being drunk, but there's more than one. So speak to us about why that would not, and your view about whether and why that would or would not be sufficient.
Sure. Well, and I don't mean this to sound comedic, but, you know, if we were to go and find that a parent being drunk in front of their child was a constitutes or restraining order or some other bad act, we'd have a lot of people in the court system, right? I mean, it's not a good parenting. It's not something that we obviously want to see, but it happens not infrequently. But that's not by itself a violation of the harassment restraining order. What you have to show is, and especially in this case, and I'm looking for the case law here, there has to be some objective behavior here that shows that my client was intending on harassing his children. So what do we show? Okay, he's drunk. Then what? Was he chasing the children around? Was he saying certain specific things to them? What was he doing? You know, she made a comment that not that it was necessarily scary, but it was that they found it funny. Okay, well, what was funny about it? Why did their what do you call it? Why would their the Carlson versus Peterson case? It's an unpublished case by this court in 2013, and in that case, it says so. Although there was evidence that respondents' children were traumatized by the incident involving the appellant, in that case, it was his being arrested and alleged criminal behavior. There's no evidence of specific conduct by appellant toward the children that caused their trauma. So that would also go to the first two issues with respect to the children finding the text message, one child finding the text message and the other child hearing things on school playground from her friends. But with this specific issue here, what was the specific conduct that my client engaged in that would cause trauma or that was threatening to the children? Was he yelling at them? Ms. Bergman doesn't say. Was she touching them? She doesn't say. Was he chasing them around? He doesn't say. As I know in my brief, she said he was doing funny things. Well, what? Was he putting microwave popcorn in the oven? You know, he's wearing a lampshade on his head. We don't know that. And that's another part of the case here. I'm trying to find the case law on it. It's cited in my brief. You need to have more than just subjective opinions here. He's mean. He said something I didn't like. He said something scary. He did whatever. Without a specific incident as to what happened here, there's no way to say whether this would objectionably be reasonable or unreasonable conduct. Even when you go back, I think it's the there's four cases I cite with respect to the respondent's behavior towards Ms. Bergman that show that, you know, talking about inappropriate statements. Well, I'm not finding it at the moment, but it's in my brief. There's a section in there about the fact that there needs to be something toward the minor children that was harassing toward them. And it has to be something specific in order for there to be form an objectionably reasonable intent. Because how could your honors, I think Judge Bratfold, you're a district court judge. You know, if you have somebody coming before you, and I know you're not supposed to, I'm not asking you to reweigh the evidence or do the things you're not supposed to do. But if you think about it, if you look at somebody's coming before you, you have to ask, how does that happen? Why did that happen? What specifically? And the judge actually tried to do that at one point. I'm going to look at my brief real quick. She asked him or asked Ms. Bergman to provide specific examples. So she first comes up and says, you know, that he made threatening statements to her. She received messages from third parties that she had seen that he was, she had seen things that people gave about his alleged sexual misconduct, verbally abusive to her, very frightened. But then when she asked, well, the district court judge asked, well, what specifically did he do? This is on page four of my brief. She first says, well, she knows when to back off. Well, that's doesn't support her argument. She says nothing been there's never been anything physical between them. So there's no, again, no assaultive behavior. She sent threatening texts about the dog. Well, it's said later on in the transcript that she acknowledged he never liked the dog. Okay, so maybe he sent threatening texts about the dog, but that's about the dog. That's not about her, right? That's not as something where we're saying that he's doing something to the dog.
He's not threatening the dog. He didn't text the dog. I mean, if someone texts a person
right.
with whom they are very hostile, that they're going to hurt their animal, I don't know. I mean, that can, there's an entire context of anger and threatening texts and mistreatment of her dog, et cetera, and threatening the dog that okay. I don't think we just have to, I don't know why the district court couldn't consider that in the whole context of this, of the person's behavior and determining whether there's objective conduct that would objectively and subjectively cause
right.
a person to fear their privacy, security, and whatever the other third.
But let me ask the question again, the question goes back, Your Honor, what was said? We don't know. I mean, in Ms. Bergman's mind, it might've been threatening. If a court saw that, they might say, okay, that's just transitory anger. That's just get this dog out of here or I'll get rid of it. I don't know what was said in those text messages. The district court, the record is completely void of that. And as the case law cited in my brief, that's why if we don't have specifics here on anything, we don't have any specifics about the conduct specifically towards Ms. Bergman, other than he walked toward me in a matter I felt nervous about.
So,
okay,
Ms. Smith, is it all right if I ask one more question? I see your time has ended.
Please.
But you know, we are in a situation where
yes.
no opposing advocate. So here's, I wanted to ask about another part of your brief, just to make sure, again, I understand your argument. So
sure.
Page 11 of your brief, and it relates in part to the specificity of the evidence.
Yes.
My question is geared toward the specificity of the evidence. As you make this statement in your brief, it should be noted that respondent's affidavit contains more information in certain areas than she testified to during the hearing. And then you go on to say, and I'm paraphrasing, so
correct, right.
Because the district court didn't make findings about some of the allegations or statements in the affidavit, that this court should assume that the court rejected those allegations. And
right.
Could you explain that for me? Because it's my understanding that the petition, which is an affidavit, is evidence in front of the court in support of the, potentially in support, that's what we would
right.
look at, but we could look at it as part of the record in this case.
Right, and that's exactly why I made that argument, Your Honor, and thank you for bringing that up. In the record, there is nothing that states that the district court was going to assume or take judicial notice of the allegations made in the petition. So
does
I think
the court need to do that, counsel?
Yes.
I mean, there is a statement in the order, right?
Right.
In the order by the district court that is relying on the files and records that were submitted.
Right.
Isn't that part of, you know, HRO proceedings under the statute?
I have always interpreted that, and I could be wrong, but I always interpret that as if you don't have, you need to spell somebody's name correctly, you need to get a date of birth or some other non-evidentiary type of part of the record in for an order that the court could consider that. But when you're considering allegations, you have to prove up the allegations. And so you can't just say something. It's not a fact unless the court hears the testimony of the parties and makes it a determination as to credibility and whether somebody is at their burden. And as a case I cite in there is the Peterson case, and then the Cush case. It actually, it's more
and
for the Cush
I don't
case.
Think either of those cases stand for the proposition that you're saying. I did find the
right.
quote that you got there in parentheses is actually from yet another case. That is an accurate
okay.
quote. It is a non-precedential case by this court. And I, you know, obviously many different facts. I don't want to.
Right. Well, no, I understand. But I mean, the Cush case is presidential. I mean, it is a published case. And so since it's citing an unpublished case, I think we
you
can.
Think Cush says a district court judge cannot rely on the petition in an HRO proceeding?
That's exactly what it says. The court made only two factual findings of purportedly harassing conduct, which
no, that's
indicate.
Not what the kid, that quote is not from the Cush case. Just to be really clear, counsel, go double check. But I've looked carefully. It's not there. I
okay.
ran a on it. It comes from an entirely different case. All right. Non-precedential.
Well, I appreciate the time you're giving me here. I want to obviously never mislead this court on anything.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Judge Bradfold, are you?
I'm done. I thank you so much, counsel, for explaining your reasoning. I just really wanted to understand exactly how you're reasoning through it. Don't worry about the citation, because like I said, I found the case and it's
okay.
Accurate.
Great.
Well, obviously, Your Honors, it's up to you guys, or not, I shouldn't say up to you guys, but you obviously, as you just did, Your Honor, you read into the cases and found the what you believe to be the correct site, and we trust and rely upon your judgment and research on that thing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Very good.
What
Thank
happened
you.
there?
No, no worries. Yeah. We know how to use WESA. We'll figure it out.
I use Fastcase, which I do not like at all, but
okay.
I unfortunately can't afford more of it. So anyway.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for your briefing and your argument. We appreciate it. The case is submitted and we'll have a decision out within the statutory time period. And with
thank
that,
you very much.
Thank you. Our oral calendar is concluded and we will stand in recess, and judges, guests will meet physically and we'll all sign off Zoom. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.